Welcome everyone to another episode of the Unlocked Basketball Podcast presented by Locked In Basketball with your host, myself, Alex Wilson. Today's guest is Justin Schuler. Justin started off as a player in Adelaide growing up there through the SBL to then eventually coaching in the SBL, North Adelaide there, making his way down to the Tasmanian Institute of Sport, finding his way up to Basketball Victoria to coach the Vic Country there for 8 years or so. And then the also a Basketball Australian assistant coach, as well as current under 17 head coach, and then eventually making his way up to the NBL Melbourne United. He's the current Melbourne United assistant coach, the NBL 1 head coach for Geelong Supercats, as well as the under 17 Australian men head coach. Please welcome Justin.
Apologies in advance. During the recording of this episode, Justin had a maintenance man working in the background. So if you hear any power drills or hammering, please mind. And hopefully it's not too noisy or disturbing for you guys. Please enjoy.
Welcome, Justin, to the show.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to start from the start. How did you were previously a player in Adelaide growing up there. And then how did you get into coaching sort of thing? How did that come about?
Yeah, I guess kind of by accident. I was coaching some school teams and junior teams just for a side sort of bit of fun, like, you know, while I was still trying to play. I was never a great player. I could shoot and that was basically it. So I got injured there and my current coach at the time kind of said to me, I think you should just come on and sit on the bench with me. And I started doing that and then he just pulled me aside one day and said, I think you're going to be a better coach than player. And at the time, I was quite offended by that, but it turned out to kind of be true. And I guess I was working for Basketball SA and just had opportunity to watch a lot of Sixers practices at the time. And just, yeah, sort of decided, all right, that's my way to stay in the sport. And was studying teaching at uni. My old man got sick, deferred that, and it just coincided. That timing was when a full-time development coach position the Sixers came up and jumped into that, and then kind of the rest is history. I think, you know, my biggest break was probably getting head coach of the North Adelaide Rockets that you touched on there. And we won a championship in my first year there. I think after 20 odd years that the club hadn't won one, and that kind of then suddenly all the jobs I kept missing out on because I was too young, suddenly, oh, now I've got enough experience so I can get it. And yeah, I guess from there, went down the Institute of Sport in Tassie, which was outstanding for me to really understand what coaching was about in a holistic aspect. Then obviously to Bus Victoria, and through that time, Melbourne United, doing some stuff with them, and then it took the leap 4 years ago to go full-time with them.
Yeah, how did you find the transition into the NBL and working for Melbourne?
The basketball is basketball. But the levels that you go up, the expectation and accountability continues to go up. So I think the biggest thing with NBL, it's kind of like doing the Australian stuff, but you've got a real finite period to get your scout or your preparation done. Has to be on point every moment of that time, and then hopefully the execution is at a level that's equal to that. So that's been definitely the biggest difference. I think, you know, it's funny when you go back at level, like back to NBL 1, and you think about, you know, this is going to, you know, we'll try and do the same things, and sometimes it's not exact, you know, it's just, it's finding every level's got its advantages and finding out what those key parts are. But as far as like a transition, I think, yeah, no, it's just about that accountability and making sure that you're on point 100% of the time.
Because one, it's being expected by the players, and then the pressure turns onto the coaching as well. If everyone's competing at such a high level, it's not just the players and that part, the little staff around, hey?
Yeah, for sure. And I think like our league's unique in that it's like it's not a 20-team league. We play each other four times, and so, you know, those real minute things can actually end up being big differences when you're playing a team over and over again. So that's been something that's I've loved is, you know, just trying to find what are the little points of differences from matchup to matchup. And then, you know, obviously we've had some pretty good success in this time and just find a way to, well, we know we're also hunted a little bit as well. So how do we find something new or find our own point of difference from season to season?
Were you pinching yourself a little when you made the NBL as a full time, or it's kind of something you're aspiring to for quite a long time, and then it kind of happened?
It's kind of weird. Like, so my sliding doors moment was after we won the championship with North Adelaide. Applied for the Sixers assistant coaching job, which I felt I was in pretty good shape for, and missed out. But from missing out on that one, I got the Tasmanian Institute of Sport job, and it just kind of, that was where I wanted to go from that moment. I'd sort of put the NBL aside, wanted to lock into the development tier, and obviously that's when my Australian coaching path kind of really took off, and just immersed myself in that. And when Dean Bickerman took over Melbourne United, we just actually just caught up to talk about the Australian athletes coming through and which kids I thought, you know, had potential to be an NBL prospect. And he just kind of said, "Well, come down and practice." And just through that and just being around, I started to kind of get a little itch. And I'd been doing high performance for probably, I think it was about 12 years, 10 to 12 years at that point. And it was just, kind of ready to have a new challenge, and was fortunate enough to, Melbourne appointed me as a development coach with them on a part-time role. So I was still able to work at Basketball Victoria, but do that. And in that year, I mean, we won the championship, which always makes it an enjoyable year. But that made me realise that, yeah, and I was ready to jump in and go for it. And then it was just, it happened quick because Mike Kelly got the Cairns job. So I was automatically slotted into basically his spot. Then Simon got the Southeast job. So then Paulie and Aaron. So like in my 4 years, we've had a lot of different coaches at Melbourne, but it's been awesome. And I mean, being involved with the club, you know, those that have been to our games, it's a great game night. It's a really well-resourced club, a great, lot of good people throughout it. Yeah, love it, mate.
And then moving on to kind of your tournament coaching with the state stuff and Australian stuff, how does a season, being a season coach as well as even your NBL one stuff, how's the season coach compared to being a tournament coach? Well, what are the major things that changes throughout that?
I guess season coaching for me, you can just keep layering. So you've got your foundation, and you'd know from being around our program, like we've got a base and then we can tweak that as it goes. For tournament play, to me, you really just got to be great, find out what you're great at, and then really milk that for all you can. And so we talk about blueprints in tournament play. And so the blueprint for how we defend a turnout, how we defend a wing on ball, middle on ball, we've got a blueprint on that. And then if we have to make slight tweaks, we can. But it's not a lot of layering. It's this is who we are. This is what we're great at. Let's get to that point. And the same goes for the offensive side of the ball. Where in season play, I think you can, that journey changes as you go along. What the team that you are week one, I think ultimately by you know, championship game, you're definitely a different team. And you've been able to probably tweak, find some new things out and go with it. I guess the other challenge with tournament play is, especially at a world championship, you're playing against four or five different types of style of play. Whereas in season, I mean, again, go back to the NBL, you know, we know those teams pretty well inside out by the time we're playing the fourth time. So that's definitely the difference in that one too.
And then obviously the short turnover between tournament games as well. Like you could be playing someone with a completely different style, like two teams with two completely different styles, and then you got to try and reprogram or reset sort of thing and kind of like, all right, this isn't our advantage, or how do you find that? Keeping everyone on track.
Got to move on quick. Like my Mrs. Cody, she's pretty good in season, letting me have that night to stay grumpy and then move on by the next day. But that's also helped me in tournament play, you know. You can't hang on to it. You've got to identify what went right or what went wrong pretty quick and then move into the next phase from there. But I say to people all the time, like a world championship campaign at the start feels like it goes a long time. But then once you're in, you know, the medal rounds, it's like, oh, that went quick because you're staying up literally for 10 days straight. You're just pushing through. Where at least in seasons, you can get a good review in. You can actually, you know, get into practice and make some real change from game to game.
And what's the sort of preparation you get? You don't get too long before tournaments, do you, with the team, especially the Australian stuff?
It's changed over my time. Like this is going to be my 10th year with the Crocs program. And wow. I think my first year we had a lot of camps and not a lot of tournaments, where now we've got an Oceania and Asia Cup, a World Champs, and not a lot of camps. So it's definitely changed. And that's something that's, yeah, it's made me be a better coach from the sense of just really narrowing in on what matters most. And, you know, that's a camp prep can be 3 days and then you're off to a tournament. So, that's definitely a skill to develop and something that, well, I wasn't great at initially, but now as time goes on, I think, you know, I've been able to really identify what that specific group can do well and then putting the things into place that are going to work best for us.
Mm. And in such a short time to build relationships with players, the season base, you get to kind of get 6 months, six to possibly more, to build a relationship with. How do you go then with the tournament? You go, I've selected you, sort of thing. We've got about six trainings. So let's kind of, how do you quickly fast forward that sort of thing without being too superficial?
I guess the culture side of the Crocs program in particular, it's never been a challenge. Like, we've done a really good job, I think, in my time in it, of past players that have gone through the program having influence on the next crop coming through. And we would always get those guys to come back, talk to the players, you know, interact with them. So I always found that the culture piece was actually quite easy in tournament play. And then the advantage of being away on the road and living in each other's pockets through, you know, pre-tournaments and whatnot. By the time you get to what matters, it is pretty good. Whereas, yeah, you're right. Like, in a season, it organically probably happens a bit more versus, you know, in a setting where you know you've got to prep a team in a short period of time, you're actually investing a lot more time in that short period. But yeah, it's been I guess it's something I've been lucky in my coaching career to have. Just good people in my squads that like to, and it's something I recruit to, is guys that are going to want to get along with each other off court. I think that how they interact off court is actually going to impact the on court component in a great way from a season perspective, where I guess in tournament, you're looking for the pieces of the puzzle that fit, and then you're trying to get that to be in the direction that you want from a coach piece. But again, that's where I think the strength of what that means to be an Australian athlete at that age group with the guys that have gone through before, it hasn't ever been really a challenge.
And having spent so long, obviously, with Basel Victoria and Basel Australia, and talent identification has played such a big role in both sense. Like, what do you look for in an athlete or a sort of at least a broad, start off with a broad spectrum? What are the first few things you're looking for in a player seeing him for the first time?
I guess when I'm just sitting there watching, I'm just looking for something that's a point of difference in general. So that could be anything, right? Like, to me, shooting stands out. If someone's making shots, that stands out to me. But it might be speed with their ball in the hand, or how they don't foul at the end of plays, or just their interaction and leadership with teammates. Just looking for something like that. And then I go to what I call my personal shopping list, which is, you know, 1v1 offensive ability. Well, what's that look like for them? Can I give them a pass grade on that? 1v1 defensive ability. Can they defend their position, the one below, the one above? Can they be a versatile player for us? Decision making or basketball IQ. Like, if they see two defenders, are they trying to shoot it over them, or are they seeing the open player? You know, that's something that I believe in the way the game should be played. And then it gets down to positional skill sets. And then the main one is shooting ability. Like, I'm a big believer, always have been, that kind of if you can't shoot, you can't play. Like, and what I mean by that is when the game's on the line, you want people that can make their free throws. You need people that can stick an uncontested shot. Just like you need people that can defend their position. But that to me has always been a bit of a point of difference in how I evaluate talent. And then the other one's just, you know, who they are as a person. You look for just, you know, are they chewing their teammates out when the ball doesn't hit them in the sweet spot, or how do they interact with their coaches, how they interact with, you know, people after the game, if you're really into them. Like, to me, that stuff carries a long way when you live in and breathe them with them in a season context.
And you mentioned then moving on to a little bit of development. Once you've got those players, you've sent, you said in Tassie, so long developing with players, right? What are the next steps for a key development that you found success with?
The Tassie was an interesting one in that my time in getting down there, I'd say it was a development program that was very kind of broad strokes. I don't know how really to articulate that, but it was like kind of one example fitted everyone.
Okay.
And what we were able to do with the Institute program is really narrow that thing down. And so we basically had six athletes on the men's side, six athletes on the women's side that were my sole responsibility in trying to become Australian athletes. You know, the beauty of that was you could really figure out what does that individual athlete need and then build their program around it. So it was really individualized. We had a tier underneath that, which was still the broad stroke component of development, but that finite program to the Institute of Sport down there really was a success we had in my time in Tassie. We won a bronze, we won a silver, top four finishes, but that was all athlete driven because the athletes bought into it. I had a great crop when I got there. That were in under 14s, guys like Tanner Krebs, Kyle Woodfull, Callum Barker, Cole Clark, all that have gone on to great collegiate careers. And then obviously Tanner just going to Brisbane, which saddens me greatly because we were definitely trying to get him to Melbourne. But just seeing those guys now be able to forge their own careers and seeing them, same on the women, so we had some good success there too. That to me was what it was about, just being able to really individualize each program and make sure that they were as successful for their outcomes that they were after as possible. And then we transfer that to Vic Country, which was basically the same concept, but just on a much broader, bigger scale. You know, I think the six males, six females, I think it was more like 20 and 20 or 30 and 30. You know, because you're just working with just such a larger population of basketball athletes. But the same outcomes, you know, and you know, just awesome to see like Jay Shelley make the Opal squad, you know, like athletes that you've seen start as a real youngster to develop to that tier. It's pretty exciting.
And then the carrying into the NBL, is it become more specific because you're not working with such a broad? And then also maintaining that kind of skill level, how's that work?
Yeah, so I guess we have a thing we call daily vitamins, and that's still individualized. We actually have just gone through that with Melbourne and our contracted guys for this upcoming season and building their individual performance plans. And basically that's, you know, what do they need for themselves to progress as an athlete, but also what do we need them to be great at to help us win? Because ultimately that's all our jobs, right? But then from that document comes the daily work, and we want that to be athlete driven. We want, you know, the athletes to buy into what they want to get better at. We may massage it a little bit and recommend, but ultimately, like, they've got to be the drivers of that, and we've got to be there to facilitate, support, and provide everything they need. But yeah, just making sure that, you know, what a David Barlow needs is very different to what a Jack White needs at this point in time. Maybe similar positions and similar game styles, but the two totally different needs. So just ensuring that, you know, we're able to provide that on a day-to-day basis. And just, you know, the ways we go about it, because we're in the building every single day, you can really break it down to the finite parts of what they need.
What do you think, in your experience or opinion, makes effective communication? We'll start off the court. How do you guys stay on the same page as your players and so on?
I think this period's been one of those that I think for every coach out there, it's probably been a challenge, right? Like, how do you keep your teams engaged? And I've done more Zoom meetings than I ever thought I would prior to this period. But to me, that's been a really – it's been a great thing in the sense that it's given people a reason to want to stay connected. And I think that's been something that we've always tried to drive, is that how you interact off court is going to ultimately be how well your relationship is on court. And if you know, use the ball screen, for example, if you guys aren't connecting in the way that you need to on the floor, well, then that conversation actually has to happen off floor. and talk to them about, well, when I'm coming off at this angle, this is what I want. Or, you know, if you're passing me the ball, I want it high every time because I'm going to go get, like, have those conversations off the floor. And what I think, what I've found in this period is, you know, Zoom meetings and making sure guys are having opportunity to still communicate. Our guys are coming in really ready to go and probably in a better space in that sense than maybe what we were in previous. And I'm not sure if it is a direct correlation, but the fact, you know, we've had weekly Zoom meetings, making sure the guys are staying connected when we've been in isolation. You're talking about any sort of topic from that sense, but you know, now we see them walk into the building and those conversations are happening pretty quick and pretty fluid and pretty natural. So yeah, like that to me has been pretty important. From a communication sense off court, like one thing I've always been big on, I know Dino's really big on, is not just making it about the basketball. It's someone's birthday, we reach out to them on that, you know, and everyone gets around it. There's someone has a kid, we're celebrating that fact. You know, not just making it about the X's and O's, or we give them enough of that anyway. But, you know, and being able to have those real conversations as well, I think is pretty important. But not also just relying on technology for that, like the face-to-face time and that personal time still matters in my opinion. But again, which has been interesting in this period where you can Zoom and you can still see each other and have a good chat.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys at Melbourne have like any kind of set weekly, like a routine as a team that you have to do outside of the court, such as the footy players, for instance, they all go to the beach or so on for recovery?
Our weeks are really structured. The challenge with our league is how many games come pretty quick and fast. So what we found was great when we were in our previous facility is we'd make the guys have breakfast together once a week. And basically it was straight after weights, we'd have the food there for them, they'd cook it up for each other. And that was just more of a social time and interaction time than anything. We thought that was outstanding. We moved into our new facility and we actually felt we were missing that midway through. And we're like, oh, we've got to find a way to just get the group together. So we started having lunches together post-practice, just so you've got some downtime, can hang out and do those sorts of things. So that's been pretty important. I mean, in the past, we've also had, you know, like when Dave Anderson was with us, team dinners were a pretty regular thing, you know. Different guys have their things that they want to get the group together and do, and we definitely encourage that. I think that's pretty important. When I've been coaching my own teams, you know, I'll actually roster it every quarter period through a season. We're going out, I can't remember what we did. I think we went to Holy Moly and played putt-putt or went to bowling, you know, just something that's a circuit breaker but a social time. They can have a couple of beers and just be lads, you know. And I think that stuff does really matter when peak performance matters under the pump. You've got to be able to relax and have that time. And, you know, we've had some crackers at Kilsyth. Felix von Hoff was one of the best at just making the team bubble along, you know, like. There's probably other stuff that Felix did that I don't want to know about. But no, like he was, the value of him just being, you know, in that sense, I always found was huge. And that was when he was with us at Melbourne as well. You know, like he, just a guy that was a bit of energy, upbeat, you know, like things are always happening. So, no, I think that's definitely important.
Yeah, with Felix, I don't think I've met a guy who can keep everyone's attention and make everyone laugh so much in such a, on whatever he comes up with, the most random stuff ever. Anyway.
Great human being.
Moving on to then the on-court communication, obviously there's a correlation to building that relationship off the court. How do you think that helps through the on-court communication?
Yeah, like, again, I think if you can communicate well off court, you're going to do it well on court. Mm. But I think something that's not natural for everyone is that ability to communicate. And I think the communication comes in so many different ways and, you know, different rates in the game. And, you know, the huddle matters, I think, in our sport. You know, like the opportunities for me as a coach to communicate to the players at any stoppage, try and talk to the guys about any time you get to huddle, that's like a timeout. So we've got to be able to share info. We've got to be able to make change. We've got to be able to praise and continue to grow. they're our moments, right? But then it's the communication I was talking about before with, say, ball screen, making sure that that relationship's there and you're able to communicate exactly what we can do to make it better. Or we nailed that one, let's get that again. You know, like having those real-time combos that continue to evolve your game plan are pretty important for sure.
I think socially under pressure, everyone's changes a little or can, and to kind of keep everyone on track. What do you like? What's your technique or tactic to keep everyone on track in high pressure situations or building up to, say, them big tournament games or a championship game, for instance?
Yeah, I guess I'm big on mindset. Like, positive mindset's been something I've always preached. And, you know, like, I got a little catch cry, stay positive and believe. It's something my old man gave me, but. Yeah. You know, like I always felt that in those real pressure games, that's kind of how you got to, I need to be, so then the players are that way. But my other part that I've always said to coaches is, like, if the pressure of the game goes up, you can't go up. Like, you've actually got to be a bit more controlled and calm. If you're finding you're in a dogfight and it's we're flat and we're running in mud, that's the time to really ramp up your energy and crank it up. So I've always tried to use that as a bit of a gauge, or especially, you know, like you coach we coached the second Vic side in under 20s there 1 year. It was just a throw together. We got together 10 days before the tournament. We ended up losing to the Vic side in the gold medal game. And I was still dirty to this day. I mean, that was a really good Victorian side. But to me, it was like that group just grew so much belief. And it was just the way, like my example was my assistant in that, and just the way we just made sure that we're positive, we're upbeat. There was a turnover wasn't a negative unless it happened twice in a row, you know, like it was, and just how that carried that group through. So, you know, that's something I just try and always remember that group, remember other groups where, you know, you sell the positive mindset, you make sure that you approach the game the same way every time, but really make that read early of where your group's at, and then I try and stick with it. I mean, you've seen me get grumpy. Doesn't mean I don't get grumpy, but yeah, like genuinely speaking, I think that's a pretty big key. But then the other one, and I'm not sure if this is a good time to bring up or not, is the post game. Like, I've never been big on going into the locker room and singing praise or losing your mind, but I'd always used to just go in the locker room and get good job. This is the week, blah, blah, blah. Something I took off Dino was after the game, that's the players' time. They know whether they've done well, whether they haven't. We'll get together as a coaching staff and we'll start moving forward. And I've really enjoyed that. And I think it's just a smart, mature way to go about it. Because definitely those moments after the game are either way too euphoric or way too down in the dumps. You know, yeah. It's very rarely are you kidding, oh yeah, this is where it was at. So that's something I think I've definitely evolved with and learned with our groups too.
And then that championship year, what was the kind of the feeling going into that championship game or even the finals series with that, like the feel around the team and kind of building up to it? What was also the approach?
Yeah, one of the more amazing teams I've been around in that you had quite a lot of strong personalities, highly competitive practices, super competitive practices. But I'll never forget, like, that morning, we sat around in a circle and we're just talking about, you know, what would winning mean to us. And CG just started talking about everyone else. And I was like, there's no way we're losing this game. You know, I left shoot around that morning going, there's just no way. And then it's funny, I watched that game back and I didn't realize how close it actually was at times. Because to me, it felt like we were up 20 the whole night. Like, right. CG came out, one of the best games I've seen him put together. But it just never felt like we were losing. And I think that was that group all year. We definitely had some challenges, you know, like there was some times there where it was pretty tough. But like, the amazing part was how the group just kind of believed in itself. And yeah, that was pretty special. The only thing I hate about that day is like, so we win. We cut down the nets and I'm literally sprinting to the back to change into Oz gear and get on the plane. So we had to go to Asia Cup. So I missed all the great celebrations on Larry's boat that night and whatnot. But yeah, still awesome memory. I remember sitting at the airport just going, did we really just win that? Like, because it was amazing. Adelaide were unreal that year. Like, you know, the two games we lost over there were just, I'm from Adelaide. I've never, like, it was violent in the building, you know. It was, like, scary. It was like, geez. So, no, that was pretty cool.
The one time you're wishing you weren't part of the Australian squad, just for that one day.
just a delay the flight for one day would have been good. But no, all the same. And then, I mean, that Asia Cup was probably a real highlight too. So I can't complain too much. But no, it's, very good memories for sure.
How was it going transitioning or reset, like a quick, bloody quick reset to go from just winning an NBL championship to now we've got to lock in for a compete at the Asia Cup? And as you said, quite a good result.
Yeah, I think coaches are like players, like confidence builds confidence. And I just felt with what I'd gone through from an NBL point, I really felt that carried into that championship. And we started slow, like, first time with that group together, and you know, we had to find our way a bit. But what it did was, we just, the process was the biggest thing. We kept selling that one in the belief. And you know, Korea, we played them in the quarterfinal. They lost the game in the rounds they shouldn't have. So we're playing a team that arguably should have been going to the World Cup, and nothing was going right that day. And I just remember, at halftime with the staff, like the staff, we were pretty, shit, we're not going to make worlds. You know, like, I know that was in some people's thoughts. It was never said, but I could see in people's eyes. And it's like, all we're going to do is just, you know, take care of this, this, and this, and we'll be all right. And and we did. Like, we stemmed the tide. Luke Travers was amazing in that game. We put him to the foul line against the zone, and he just picked it apart. And then we go on and take care of it pretty easily from there. But you know, I think had I not gone through what I just had through that final series, I may have allowed my mindset to get into a shit, like, the pressure's on here. We're not getting it done. So that was, yeah, I found that was really good flow on from that tournament.
You would have felt confidence would have been through the bloody roof at that stage, eh?
No, life was good.
That's awesome. And then just quickly noting back on the communication, like, what would be, that's kind of, we already covered it, but just anyway, the avoiding breakdowns, communication breakdowns happening on the floor quite commonly, in high level situations or even just home and away games sort of thing. How do you avoid the, even though we've kind of covered it already, but how do you avoid those breakdowns?
I guess, I think they're going to happen, but then you've got to address that. So if something hasn't been solved in that game or in that moment, that has to come up in review. And then you need to be able to identify that and communicate and have those real conversations. That to me is the biggest hurdle in team sport, is when something just gets left. It's like, all right, you didn't cover my bag, I'm not covering yours next time. And now that becomes a whole big issue. So addressing that in the moment, and maybe if it is the ideal one, if it's not in the moment, then making sure in review, you're nipping that in the bud and moving on from that. I think that's an absolute imperative piece. It is amazing. Like, talking about communication, I always felt our defense was best when David Barlow was on the floor, because he's such an effective communicator. It wasn't about him just defending his guy. He's telling everyone how to defend. And you know, I think when you've got players like that, it really stands out versus when you don't have players like that. You know, it's pretty, things can go bad pretty quick if you haven't got good communicators on the floor and people that aren't willing to make change on it.
That's also that kind of that veteran, having a veteran on the team, sort of not afraid of, or don't really care about his image, or not there to impress anyone, but kind of get a job done, helps you as a coach as well, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And but Jack White's come into our building now, and Whitey's got that same, I mean, I've been around Whitey a long time, and he's always had it, that he's willing to try and help someone else out with his voice. And it's a skill, and it's an asset for him, and why I think he'll be a good player for quite a while in our league.
Well, that's awesome, Shula. I don't have too much more. I don't really have anything more. I think we've covered everything we wanted to today. Is there anything that you'd like to add in that we've missed, or anything useful to the coaches out there?
Oh man, it's a lot. So much. No, honestly, I just appreciate it. It's kind of funny when you get asked, like, your journey and whatnot. You know, heaps of coaches after them. I guess the thing I would say is, and this is definitely from Peter Lonigan, this isn't mine, but it's not a straight path, you know, like you're going forwards, backwards, side to side. Like there's no way I thought I'd be going through Tassie to get to the NBL. Like that just wasn't, at that time, that wasn't a thought, and that was one of the best things I ever did. And yeah, like you're not going to get every job you go for, but that shouldn't change the mindset to keep pushing for that and then figure out, all right, well, it's not a straight line to that one, but what's the side route to it? And we had Phil Handy over every year, and he talked about the third door. You know, you can't get in the front door, can't get in the back door, but there's got to be a third entrance somewhere. Like, how do you get in? And I think, you know, the more as coaches you generate that, the better. And then just own what job you're in. That's the biggest one I see now when I talk to coaches and different staff and whatnot, is like the want to get to the next thing really quick. And I keep thinking about, you know, that Adelaide job. If I got that assistant job, I wouldn't be the coach I am today. I know that for a fact. Like missing out on that, finding a different path, figuring some things out, I think really helped me get to where I am. So yeah, that to me is like, just own the job you're in, because that's what generates the next one. And when I was in Tassie, last Victoria tried to get me to come across three times before I said yes. So like, you know, that it takes care of itself. The more you just lock in, you know, I would never have coached Australia had the Tassie kids not been going well. You know, I wouldn't have got the BV job if Tassie didn't do well. I wouldn't have got the MU job if BV didn't do well. So you just got to keep taking care of your backyard, and good things come, I think.
Definitely. It's not as straightforward as climbing the ladder as it appears, as you said.
It's definitely not an office building where you go from one job, now I'm on to the next one.
Work your way up the floors.
You're there and everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that sums up the chat this afternoon. Thank you very much, Shula, for coming on to the podcast. Appreciate you coming on, sharing your experience and your MBL or coaching experience all together. Thank you very much.
No worries, mate. Anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Unlocked Basketball podcast featuring Justin Shula. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure to follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. You can find us at Locked In Basketball for the latest update on Instagram and Facebook. I'd love to hear your feedback. Give us a thumbs up, follow and share would be greatly appreciated. And make sure to stick around for the next episode.